Great weekend. Everybody loves beating England and Twickenham. That's one that just unites the rest of world rugby, doesn't it?
All the top players, those players that you need to come through in a big game, came through.
The Welsh have always played an expansive style of rugby. That's how they want to play. So
when they were at their best a few years back, they only kicked the ball. They never played. Warren Ball, get it up in the air, chase, no mistakes. That's what they did.
Italy probably have the best scrum in the Six Nations. They're definitely a threat.
I've always thought the Six Nations should have a promotion relegation.
There's enough excitement in the tournament that I don't think we need that level of jeopardy in the rest of the tournament.
Would you be saying that if England was at the bottom of the table?
Yeah, it would be funny. But for a cheap giggle, it would be a bit much.
Ricardo, when are you going to ask about Super Rugby, mate?
But it starts
here. Victor, that is rude of you.
Right, welcome to Rivals. And Trimby, you were very quick on the call this week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we should do multiple podcasts. Let's do multiple podcasts this week.
Where were you last week, mate? What's going on?
I still would have been a little bit happy last week.
When Ireland play well, you just can't pick a juice to come on the show, mate. Like, what's going on?
Are we back? Is that how everybody's seeing it? Is Irish rugby back? Or are we just being positively dramatic as we were negatively dramatic?
Was Jekyll and Hyde an Irishman by any chance? Because I can't work that one out, mate.
I know. I don't want to do the positive version of all the drama over the last couple of weeks. It was a crisis in Paris literally 3 weeks ago. And it was probably crisis after Italy as well, according to a lot of people. But this has surprised everyone. That performance just came out of nowhere. And all the big players turned up. You know what I mean? All of the big names, all of the leaders, all of the Irish guys that we've been leaning on for a number of years that people had started to suspect were starting to get over the hill, team in transition, all that sort of stuff. I don't know if it's put that debate to bed, but if we're able to demonstrate that this is like a turning point rather than the Jekyll and Hyde, unless we take a dip again, but it's a good place to be. Great weekend. Everybody loves beating England and Twickenham. That's one that just unites the rest of world rugby, doesn't it?
Now, isn't it unbelievable how long a week is in international rugby? I mean, we were all thinking, where's Ireland? They're on their way out. They're in trouble for the next World Cup. And all of a sudden, they gave a performance that was really unbelievable. I don't know if England were that bad, but again, it's a classy outfit. You need to go out there. You need to go do it. And what Trimby said, all their top players, those players that you need to come through in a big game, came through. They stood up. They performed at their best. And I wonder, do you think they'll settle at 10 now with the move they made, or are they still in between, Trimby?
I mean, it can't go any other direction now. Jack Crowley was very good in an understated way. It wasn't all about him. So it was a less is more performance. And whenever you're 9-12, the guys inside and outside of you are playing as well as Jameson Gibson-Park and Stuart McCluskey, then just fit in, give the ball early, get into your shape. You don't need to be the rock star putting guys through holes or pulling rabbits out of hats. And I think that was a moment of realization and maturity from Jack Crowley. But again, it's one game. Hopefully we can kick on from here and he can kick on from here as well. But Six Nations, lads, you must be looking on, you two, you three, looking on just like orphans at Christmas time looking into a toy shop. You would love to be involved in the Six Nations because it just throws up results on weekends like this.
Like how good was Jamison Gibson-Park? So I think like what you mentioned, Victor, is a really important one. Were England bad or were Ireland just that good? But I thought the first 32 minutes of that Ireland performance was like absolutely world class. England were in, I think England were completely shell shocked and that didn't help, but they were shell shocked because, of that amazing performance. But I do want to talk about Jekyll and Hyde because this year's Six Nations, besides France, I'm going, what the hell is going on? I mean, how can we have an England that good and then have an England that bad? and then you have an Ireland that bad and then that good. The only consistency is France at the moment. I mean, I saw the Welsh game and I thought, what the hell is going on here? And then late in the game, I don't know, Victor, if you saw the Welsh defence, it was like watching under 13 defence. They just had absolutely no idea at one stage. Like, I mean, Finn Russell was, you know, running at the line and he did a simple behind the back and there was just absolutely no Welsh defence. And I'm going, I'm sort of watching this Jekyll and Hyde performance from everyone. I mean, it's weird.
What about just one player that you haven't really talked about a lot, McCloskey, the 12 for Ireland. He's got a massive heart. Why is he not full-time starting 12 just like every year?
Did he start against the All Blacks, Trimby?
He did, yeah. We bumped into him.
Is that the
in
guy
Chicago.
We met when we went and had a walk and had a cup of coffee when you made me jump in the bloody river?
That's right. Yeah, that's he's a lot. And he's so he's 33.
He's a big unit. Like
he's a big, big boy, but he's also got
a
really good skill set.
As well.
Some wheels. Yeah, he reeled in Marcus Smith, didn't he? He's on a slightly unusual one. Now, anybody who's watched Ulster play for the last 10 years, he's been one of Ulster's best players. He's the talisman. He'd give the ball to McCloskey and he gets you in there shape. He gets you gain lines. He gets you offloads. All of that brilliant stuff. But he's just very subtly matured and added layers to his game and added just a kind of a level of composure. He just surges through contact and he kind of contorts his body, keeps pumping his legs. He's happy to go to ground. He's happy to keep options alive and people are starting to read him as well. So, the kick. He's also introduced a bit of a kicking game, offload game, passing game. His distribution to Balakun on the edge, big whipped long pass, feed the speed in the edge. Balakun, we can talk about him as well. But like, when's the last time Ireland have had proper pace like that out wide? So it's a big point of difference, and it's a real demonstration of
since
me.
Just one thing I want to come in. Remember last year we spoke about playing with emotion. And we said there's probably two teams, Ireland and New Zealand, that can get away with it. But this week, there was a lot of emotion in that Irish team. They were psyched up for this game. They wanted to show what they can do. And that just shows that with rugby, there's always a little bit of that. If you get that real emotion right on the day and you want to go perform and you're just mentally more prepared than the other team, then things happen on the field. And I mean, if you look at Andy Farrell in the stands there and how emotional he got, and normally he's very calm, there was a lot of emotion that went into this game for Ireland as well.
Why do you think, Victor? And why do you think, Trimby? Because I'm really interested in this. And you mentioned it before, Trimby, your older players or those players with longevity to them, but I don't like to call them old because I used to hate being called old as a player. I mean, is it one and done? Can they get up emotionally all the time? I mean, Ireland used to play like that often. So is that a good sign or a bad sign? Like,
no, you're asking the right questions. One and done. So Twickenham, it's easy to get emotionally ready for Twickenham, but maybe it's more difficult to get emotionally ready for Wales on a Friday night whenever just the state of Welsh rugby at the minute. Now, granted, actually, I thought they were a lot better at the weekend, but the individual lads with a point to prove at that Irish side as well. And Andy Farrell's created an environment where Josh van der Fleer got dropped. He's got a point to prove. James Ryan has a point to prove. Who else is there in there? Like, Jack Crowley's got a point to prove. Stuart McCloskey, I suppose, long-term, he wants to demonstrate how good he has been and he can do it on the big stage. Plenty of guys put their hand up and they responded to that when Andy Farrell, like, I know, Victor, there's a bit of a Razzie thing here. Just plant the seed with some of these guys and just create an environment where they have to demonstrate. You're creating that emotional response. And then there's guys like Dan Sheehan and Caelan Doris, who we haven't seen the best of this season, but then we just saw the best of them. I don't think that's a coincidence. Andy Farrell creates an environment where he gets the best out of these guys, and the big players turned up and they were leaders at the weekend. So, but you're right, JK, can they do that consistently week in, week out? Farrell's got them to that position in the past, but we'll find out in the next couple of weeks whether there's something there.
Let's just have a look at England too. Like obviously, you know, last year they're playing really good football. I think they won 12 games in a row. Now they've, you know, dropped a couple. Are they in trouble?
Things change quickly. Victor, didn't you say at the time didn't we say at the start of the Six Nations, we said they absolutely look like they're on the right trajectory. They look formidable. Yeah. They've got momentum. Their kicking game's good. Set pieces good. Everything on paper is good. But we did say at the start, they haven't been tested yet. And that's the moment when you go, what is this team made of? And it's a bit of an intangible. They've been tested twice and they failed both tests, Victor.
Yeah, it's difficult for them. I always feel for the English team because I think the English media makes it so hard. They win 3-4 good games and then they world beaters. They supposedly number one in the world. Then they lose two and they want to chase away everyone. We spoke about it last week. Now they want Borthwick gone after he won 12 in a row. So I don't think it's that a bigger problem. I still believe they know how they wanted to play. I just think if you look at that pack of forwards of them, especially the guys they picked this weekend, especially in a big physical game, they will just be too light. You need those guys that can punch holes, especially if the defense are up, they're coming off the line. You need ball carriers that can go through a wall. And that's probably the one area where England's lacking at the moment. They've got 2-3 big ball carriers that's not even on the bench at the moment. So I think if they look at their pack, bulk up a little bit, they still got all the quality in their team. They probably need maybe one or two game breakers as well at the back, but I think they're still up there with the best teams in the world.
So who's their big ball carriers, Victor? It's Ben Earl, it's Henry Pollock, but usually on top of that, you've got Ellis Genge.
I mean, not one of them are going to run into the wall. Ben Earl will. What's the long-haired flanker with the dread hairs? He played a few games at 8 last year, and I thought, wow,
Kiwi boy.
They must go with him. Yes. He's got a double name.
Yes.
Kiwi boy.
And I thought, he can make a difference. And yeah, he hasn't been picked. He can play lock as well. He can play 4 and 6 and 8.
Cunningham but South. Chandler Cunningham South.
Yes. They just need something that can really bulk them up. And we've said it, the tight 5 also. Scrum time haven't been tested.
I think the really interesting thing for me, and I actually had a day with Wayne Smith on Monday, and we were talking about how bad the Northern Hemisphere is at scrambling defense. It's one thing that you learn in Super Rugby because there's so many more line breaks, whereas in the Northern Hemisphere, especially at Six Nations, it's really quite tight and really quite tactical and kicking and, you know, it's really set. But I just noticed that England had no idea scrambling defense, neither did Wales. It's really interesting that I think the game is changing quite considerably in the North and you're getting these breakout games where – and so if you don't practice some of those things, for us, like I say, in the Southern Hemisphere, scrambling defense, we practice scrambling defense because there's going to be line breaks. But I really noticed on the weekend that English scrambling defense was terrible. The Welsh scrambling defense was terrible. So my question is the game changing, Victor? Is the Northern Hemisphere game now, you know, opening up?
I don't quite agree. I think transition in rugby is so important at the moment. And I mean, from the kicking game, from the high kicks, that's probably where you get the broken field from. Yes, sometimes line breaks, but I mean, every kick, there's almost broken field where people need to get into broken field defense and broken field attacks. So I'm not quite there. The Welsh team is just struggling at the moment. And yeah, maybe a few combinations, different center pairing. Ford's also not the bravest at 10. Maybe one or two problems are there on defense in the back line.
I thought Wales were better though. I thought Wales demonstrated a big step forward and it looked atmospheric in Cardiff. I thought it looked like there was an atmosphere, looked like there was an intensity and excitement on game day, and it's a real reminder that we need Wales going well. We're desperate for them contributing in a meaningful way to Six Nations, and I thought the performance on the pitch kind of reflected the atmosphere a little bit. I thought it was a big step forward. Devastating for them because they've got nothing to show from it, but I thought it looked like they looked a little bit more about themselves. It was probably more about them performing well than Scotland doing their Jekyll and Hyde after beating England.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, they Wales were winning for 90% of the game. I mean, so, you know, there was
What surprised me the most about that particular game was, I totally agree with you, but then they were really, really bad. They looked like an under 15 side for the last 20 minutes. That's what surprised me, because they, I agree, they looked fantastic, but then they just sort of, I don't know whether it's a belief thing or a fitness thing or whatever, but they just completely fell apart. I felt.
Yeah. I think it is.
That's why I'm using the word Jekyll and Hyde, because that's what it
yeah.
like.
So I
think,
if you look at
beating up Wales on Wales, is a bit tough.
They haven't. They haven't put together more than 10 minutes of rugby over the last couple of years. And this is the first time they put together 40, 50 minutes.
Yeah. And
they're just not used to that level of intensity. They can't perform at that level of intensity for 80 minutes. I think it felt kind of inevitable. Scotland eventually are going to get a hold of this game, as and Wales just started to wilt a little bit.
I just think Wales is not at a place, or they don't have the team to play as much rugby as they're playing at the moment. They're trying to play this ball-in-hand game. They overplay. Then the wheels will come off in the last 20 minutes. You only have so much energy, and you need to use it at the right times. And I remember some of the coaches, especially when you're in difficult times, that's what Rusty did with the Springboks. We did it under Henekamay with the Bulls when we were really nowhere. It's just going back to almost very defensive, great kicking game, play there, only wait for turnovers. But Wales want to go out, they want to play, and unfortunately I think they play themselves off their feet and they make mistakes, and there's a lot of turnover trials against them as well.
But they mightn't have the physicality, Victor, to do the alternative. Maybe they feel like, okay, if we stretch sides, then we might not be fit enough to do it now, but if we continue to do this, our skill set will get up to it, and then our fitness and condition will get up to it as well. But I doubt they've got the physicality to do the kicking game and the direct.
Yeah, for me, it's very difficult, because you say when I always talk to teams. I mean, we've got teams in South Africa that's really struggled for the last 7 years, and they always talk about, let's work on the process. Let's get the process right. Let's get our skill set. Unfortunately, you need to win first. I don't think they've got the players that you want to go send into a game where they've got 2-3 options every time they get the ball. Unfortunately, they're just not good enough at the moment to do the right decision under pressure. And then they make mistakes, and then things go downward. So I would want to go, if I coach him, I would think, go much more plain, go much more conservative. They don't have the skill set to make decisions under pressure at the moment, and get those things that they want to do in a game, make sure they get them right.
So what the hell happened then? What the hell happened in Wales? Because I think, Victor, I don't totally agree with you, because I think, like, Welsh have always played an expansive style of rugby. That's how they want to play, and that's how they brought their kids up. So
when they were at their best a few years back, they only kicked the ball. They never played.
Possibly.
Yes. Warren Ball was
Warren
reasonably,
Ball, get it up in the
Warren
air,
was,
chase,
yeah.
No mistakes. That's what they did. I think if you think about the World Cup final in Japan, 6-3 for South Africa, they didn't play anything at all.
I think there's a
nice
generation gap here.
They want to
be brave,
but it's not easy.
I think JK is remembering Wales from the 70s, and you're remembering them from the 2000s.
Yeah,
probably right.
just on that point, Victor, what about the France-Italy game? I thought was a brilliant game of rugby. The quality, I thought, was brilliant. And Italy contributed to that quality. And actually, we probably saw, like, that game, it wasn't in the balance. It was never really in the balance. But the game was tighter for longer periods than it had been in the last couple of weeks. So Italy probably pushed them harder than Ireland and Wales, I would argue. Set piece, obviously, all that sort of stuff. But maybe this is to your point, Victor. Once they get that, the physicality, the simple elements of the game, set piece, they've sorted that out. They've nailed that. And now they're putting the ball into the hands of Capuozzo and Menicello. Now they're playing with width. And a few times I watched them, I was thinking, they're playing just outside their 22, flinging balls around. And it looks naive, away from home especially. But then it just looked like they were just backing themselves so much. I find myself thinking, maybe this naivety is actually ambition. It's courageousness, and they're getting rewarded for it. Not so much on the scoreboard, but they played some brilliant rugby, and they're probably unlucky not to be in the game a little bit more towards the end. What's your thoughts on that, Victor? I suppose just with that mindset of, you know, get conservative, bring things back, do the basics well, and then add to that. What's your thoughts?
So I think Italy got a big advantage at the moment with Benetton that's been doing really well, and all those guys playing together quite a bit, so really understanding each other. So all of those decisions are so much easier because most of those guys play for Benetton as well. And like you said, I mean, their set piece, their scrum came together. They put a lot of teams under pressure with that set piece, and they're physical and they get over the advantage line. So then it is. And that's the other thing that I had to add. So if you play that conservative game, you need game breakers, and they've got a few game breakers at their back. So if there's turnovers, one, two passes, those guys can hurt you. So I think it will be a good test for England. It will be interesting to see how they go into this game, because I think the Italian team will be very confident. They will be up for it. It's in Italy, and it will be a big test for England this weekend.
Italy have the best scrum in the Six Nations, Victor, I think, based on what we've seen in the last few weeks. Italy probably have the best scrum in the Six Nations, and they've got one or two guys out on their outside backs who have more X factor than anybody else in the Six Nations, bar France, I suppose, with what they're doing with Addis Ogbe and BLBRE. But Italy are absolutely, they're definitely a threat. And it's not just patronizing Italy. Oh, they've come, you know, it's an, you know, like that press conference thing. Oh, you know, Italy, you got to be aware of Italy. It's not the Italy of old. They are actually significantly better. And it's just in time, actually,
with Italian coaches dropping off. Like, busting with pride there, waiting to say something.
Yeah, go JK.
I've been saying it for weeks. I think they're the best Italian team that I've seen. There was probably when Nick Mallett had the side, Victor, they probably went through a bit of a golden era, but this is the best Italian side I've seen. That French game was incredible. The French are playing like they have four World Cups. They just play with this confidence. They never seem to get rattled. But it was a really good game of rugby. I agree with you, Trimby. I think, you know, Minicello, they've got some game breakers. They're really better disciplined. I think they do miss a couple of those. When you think about the difference, and you talked about it before, I think they miss an extra two big ball carriers, Victor. You know, when you think about France, they've got, you know, a lock, big locks that can carry. They've got big props that can carry. And while their scrum might be good, Trimby, I think to make that next level, they're just missing a couple of big ball carriers that give you just those couple of extra threats. But like, they started incredibly well. I'm just really proud of Italy, because the resources that they have is probably a lot less than everyone else. I think I think the coach has done a great job. I just think they're playing well. Good on them. I mean, they got pumped. Let's not forget that. They got pumped, like it was 72 points or whatever. But it didn't feel like that because they were in the game for long periods of time. So, you know, I think the Six Nations, I've always thought the Six Nations should have a promotion relegation, because I think some of those other, you know, teams like Romania and those
Georgia.
Are putting a Georgia. Lot of money, you know, Georgia, Romania, those teams, you know, South and Africa. I think it'd keep everyone honest. But you know, I just think that the more, you know, the Jekyll and Hyde that we're seeing is great for the game, you know? Like, shit, we picked England, now they could get the wooden spoon.
I asked you about that promotion relegation. Just imagine this, like, because the reality is probably 2 or 3 years ago, Wales would have been relegated, you know? And would they have ever come back?
You're not relegated, mate. You play off against, there's a difference. You don't go straight down. There's a playoff game. So
let's say they played Georgia 3 years ago. Georgia comes up and Wales comes down, and Wales can't get back up. What does that do for Welsh rugby?
That's an administration problem. The reason why Wales, so this is what we forget. We blame the coaches and we blame the players. Some muppet in Wales decided to cut high performance budgets, and so as they stop putting coaches into schools, they stop spending money on their kids, and now they're paying the price. But no one talks about that muppet, right? So if you get relegated, that's why I like the English Premiership, right? You get relegated, you get your money for a year, you don't make it back up. Like, if they got relegated and they stayed down, it's because the politicians and the people who are running the game are not doing their job. End of story.
It just introduces a lot of risk from a financial perspective, and then investors and partners and all that sort of stuff. It just makes it, you know, the idea that Wales wouldn't be in the Six Nations kind of feels a bit unthinkable. And for all the stuff that rugby does in all different areas and makes mistakes commercially, all that sort of stuff, Six Nations is one of the things that rugby has done very, very well. And mucking around with that, introducing relegation and introducing the risk that comes with that, and then financial risk.
It's not relegation. It's a playoff game. It's a play-out game.
But if they lose that, it is. I mean, Welsh rugby is. We've already, even the last couple of weeks, we've said it's crisis. But I mean,
it could be England. Could be England this year, mate.
We would all enjoy that.
Like,
I just go back to England.
I don't agree. I don't agree with you at all, Trimby. I totally disagree with that, because I think that laziness comes with all that money, right? And if you have promotion relegation, then you are, like, I'm not saying the players and the coaches, I'm actually saying all the staff and everyone around the environment's going, this money's going to go away unless we actually do it. I reckon it just creates way more high performance off the field.
Mm. It creates a jeopardy. It definitely does. It definitely does that. But I just don't feel like Six Nations, there's jeopardy in terms of, like, positioning the table, and it's so fickle. Like, you just look how our conversation has completely changed in 1 week and 2 weeks. There's enough excitement in the tournament that I don't think we need that level of jeopardy in the rest of the tournament.
Trimby, would you be saying that if England was at the bottom of the table?
I would. If earlier on I said we need Welsh rugby, we also need, unfortunately, we need English rugby.
It'd be quite funny though, wouldn't it? That.
Yeah, it would be funny. Cheap giggle, it would be a bit much.
Don't you think rugby needs Georgia? Don't you think rugby needs a pathway? I think the championship should have the same thing. Because
hold on, Victor, you come in, because we've had two guys arguing. You're the referee.
No, JK's talking so much nonsense at the moment. I'm with Trimby on this. I mean, the Six Nations, the commercial value with Wales travelling to England, that's just huge games. You can never not have Wales or England in the Six Nations. So, yeah, JK's talking a lot of nonsense.
Georgia had their chance in the summer when they played Ireland, and the stadium was half full. There was less than 10,000 people there. It was a shit spectacle. No one enjoyed it.
In Ireland?
No, in Georgia. Ireland toured there, played Georgia and then played Portugal, and it was a waste of everybody's time.
Can I just move the subject on a bit? Just going on to one of my favourite players, Henry Pollock, there was a quote today from Eddie Jones, and I thought this was really, really unfair. He compared him to Bob Skinstad. He said that, you know, he said he looks good for 20 minutes, but, you know, he goes missing. I thought, that was really insulting to a bloody good player. But
there's a big insult for Bobby Skinstad.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Massive. Yeah.
Because my timeline is full of pictures of Henry Pollock being held down by an Irish player and people laughing at him. So how did you see his performance?
I'll probably come up for him. I still think at his age, what he brings to the game at international level, you don't want to see him starting the game. But when he comes off the bench, he does have impact. So at this moment, I don't think he's a starter. And I don't think you can mention him in the same name as Richie McCaw or Peter Steph De Toey or any of these flankers. But, I think he's still got some value. He's still got some value. Coming off the bench, he does have an impact. I hate to say that, but when I watch him, there's excitement. He does bring something, but unfortunately, at this stage, he's definitely not a starter.
Here's another question for you. So I don't like to do this very often, but I agree with Victor. So, I was with the professor yesterday, and I love spending time with the professor, Wayne Smith, and we were talking about hybrid players, right? So players that can play on the wing, play 12, play it loose forward. And it looks like rugby is going that way. I don't know if I agree with it, right? I don't know if I agree with hybrid players. But I think that this young kid came on in November against the All Blacks and he was out wide, put a kick in. Like, I agree with Victor. It's okay to be an impact player. It's okay to be an amazing impact player, and you don't need to start. The physicality early in a game of rugby, if you're his size compared to, you know, some of the other players, and you bring him on late and he finds himself out wide on the wing, he can do special stuff. So I think we need to think not as traditionally, you know. And that surprises me from Eddie, because I don't think you could ever compare Bobby Skinstad with Pollock right now, right? Or ever, just because they're different players. So this guy's a hybrid, and he shouldn't start. He should come off the bench, and they should let him kick. They should let him turn up on the wing. They should let him, you know, create that unpredictable part of his game.
I don't think it writes off the option of him starting, though. Just, like, at the weekend, it didn't go that well. I would argue he was one of the few guys earlier on who was getting over the gain line, getting his nose through, looking for offloads, hitting the deck, getting back up. He brought a lot of that energy that we've seen him bring off the bench from the start. It wasn't enough energy. Like, England just couldn't get across the line. And it might have been a very different game if George Ford nails those two kicks to the corner, or maybe they hold on to ball, or maybe Ellis Genge doesn't drop that way. You know, there's little things that could have gone differently for England at the start of the game, and it could have been a different game altogether. And it did feel like he brought a lot of that vibrancy and excitement and energy. Yes, that is more suited to coming off the bench, and everybody's seen that, and he's demonstrated he can definitely do that. He hasn't demonstrated successfully that he can start, but I think he's 21 years old. He could easily be a starter in a year's time, in a couple of years' time, and he'll get another opportunity, and next time around he could easily take it. He's very, very special.
Maybe with him and Curry in the loose chair, maybe just too light. If they replace Curry and he can play more to the ball or whatever, can also work.
Or maybe not. Maybe he's going to be the world's best attack player. Who cares?
Yeah. But I think Ricardo,
when are you going to ask about Super Rugby, mate?
Well, that was where I was going. I was going to say that you're in the dice here.
Victor, that is rude of you. That is rude, considering you're the bloody traitors and you left us.
I watched the Brumbies did really well.
Oh yeah. Well, I'm in Christchurch. I'm looking over the new stadium. It's just around there. It looks fantastic. Did you see that, Trimby? You guys haven't seen it. You don't care about Super Rugby anymore. But
Been watching the Winter Olympics. To be honest,
yeah. Well, you stick to your ice skating, JK. You just tell us about the Brumbies Crusaders.
Oh, I've never seen that from the Crusaders. I'm sorry to say it 15 times, but Jekyll and Hyde. I've never seen rugby like it. I don't know what's going on. Victor says, you know, it's 2% now, and anyone can win on the day, and we need to think differently about the game. But when you see the Crusaders get pumped by 50 and capitulate, I've never seen that before. You know, the Blues. I was happy the Blues won away. That was an important one. Crusaders are 2-0 after winning it last year. So it's like the Six Nations down here. She's all over the place.
They're very happy in Australia because, you know, the Australian teams are winning. You know, that's the first time I think an Australian team's put 50 points on an opponent in New Zealand. You know, Jorgensen's playing well for the Waratahs. You know, I mean, it's hard for Australia in this market because, you know, there's so much attention given to rugby league and AFL that they'll grab any positives, you know, and like they're just about having a parade for two winning games. But, you know, it's a good sign for Australian rugby.
I tell you what, Victor, you would have really, really enjoyed the Highlanders Chiefs game. It was a really good game of football. It was really physical. You know, you can see Jamie Joseph's imprint on the Highlanders. The Chiefs played well. It went right down to the wire. It was like an old school game of footy. It was a really good game. Yeah, and Ricardo, like the Australians, I think we need them. Like, I find what you say patronizing. Like, they should be like the best team in the world, like they've always been. And all of a sudden now we're saying, oh, isn't it good they've won? They used to win all the time. When do we start saying, oh, wow, that's good. They're playing well.
Yeah, you know it's not 1986, eh?
Oh, good point.
No, I mean, look, I got texts from most of my Australian friends saying the Bledisloe's coming back, you know, after two games. So, you know, they're cock-a-hoop. But, you know, you wouldn't write the Crusaders off after a couple of games. But that was a surprise. I mean, and watching the game, the Crusaders were in the fight for till 10 minutes to the end, and then there were like three late tries scored. So
my biggest fear, and if you guys would just be a little less arrogant in the Northern Hemisphere, and I'll talk to you about Northern Hemisphere, Victor, because you're Northern Hemisphere now.
He's one of us.
I'd be really interested if you watch that Chiefs game, because I really need to understand, and I'll need your honesty, Victor, and you, Trimby, although you're a bloody bit of a fair-weather friend because you only turn up when the show in Ireland wins. But anyway, besides that, I'm really interested for you guys to tell us what you think of the level of Super Rugby, because I'm really worried that it's dropped quite considerably, and that's a real worry for us, especially because we're going to have to go into test matches, go to South Africa. You know, whereas I still think Six Nation prepares those teams for the other tournaments, you know what I mean? So I'd love for you guys to have a look at that Chiefs-Highlanders game. I'd be really interested to see what you think.
This weekend I'll be back in front of the TV watching all those games. I love watching Super Rugby, so I'll be watching. Just tell me, with the Crusaders, because I only saw the highlights, do they have a few of their All Blacks players not playing at the moment? Pause at full strength, except injuries. Are they rested?
There's a couple, but there's no excuses for that. Like, they had enough back of their top players, for sure. Yeah, all the All Blacks are pretty much back, unless there's some special cases. You know,
no, like, there's no excuses from New Zealand, Victor. You know that.
Okay.
How close are New Zealand to getting another head coach?
Don't rush us. It's plenty of time.
It's this week, Trimby. So the interviews are this week, and the board meeting is next Tuesday. So today week is the board meeting to ratify what they decide this week. So, yeah, we're getting close, mate. Close.
And apparently, if Savea is not happy, is he just taking himself back to Japan? Is that the way it's going to work?
That was bullshit. That was incredibly poor journalism. And you know, that was really unfair on Artie. And that's where
it untrue?
No, it wasn't true at all, mate. It wasn't true at all. You know? Whether they had some confrontation as coach and player, possibly, but there's no way Artie had anything to do with a player revolt. That was just bullshit. Right? That's really, really dangerous that you know, people speculated about that because it's unfair. What I have heard is that the process was very, very fair, right? And it wasn't personal as a review. So, you know, I think it's amazing, though.
It's like a story like that just becomes folklore and everyone just accepts it. And that sort of goes down in history as part of the story, you know?
I think part of the problem, Ricardo and Trimby, you know, like you said, when are we going to have a coach? Part of the problem is these things need to happen faster so that people don't fill the void. You know, like, I couldn't work out who the third coach was, and then I heard yesterday there's only two that are going to be interviewed. I don't know whether that's truth or not. You know, and then we've heard Steve Hansen's been approached. So when you leave that void, that's what happens. And there was definitely something not right with the All Blacks in November, and I think that sort of created the void, and you know, that's what happens. And
we talked a lot about problems and Jekyll and Hyde's, but let's just finish on one positive note. Victor, is South Africa still the best team in the world?
Of course. What do you mean? Are you still arguing about it?
No, I just need you to confirm it.
Telling you, France is not far behind. French team is very close.
You haven't mentioned the World Cup wins, and it's just weird that we're 40 minutes into this podcast and you haven't mentioned it.
I'm trying my best here to go through one show without saying that we're the double world champs.
I think, Ricardo,
so close.
To answer your question, so I think the world's best team will be decided on the greatest rivalries trip in August.
Oh, yeah, the Selfish Tour.
I'm so happy. Trimby, I'm so happy that we've gone back to tours. I reckon this bullshit that we play in the summer is crap. We need to get back to decent tours where Ireland come down and they play bloody Wanganui and we kick the shit out of you midweek like we used to.
Old school. So how do you think Australia are feeling about this? If you're just giving off to Victor about jumping ship and leaving Super Rugby and you lads are doing your own thing, Australia is like the unpopular kid didn't get invited to the slumber party.
I think they just want to come make money in South Africa. The JK team.
We're looking after our greatest rivals, Trimby. Mm-hmm. Like, you know.
It's going to be magic.
There's someone sitting here talking about not having
a bigger than a British and Irish Lions tour. Huh?
So you can keep your 60 million, Trimby. Bloody hell. What's wrong with that, mate?
All right, come on, guys. You're falling apart. Let's.
Yes, we're unraveling, aren't we?
Yeah, as soon as we mention two World Cups by South Africa, it's time to close the show. So that's the end of Rivals this week. And we'll catch you next week to see if South Africa is still the number one team in the world.
Well, I hope to see you next week, Trimby, because you only turn up when Ireland win. So it'd be nice if you came if they lost.
They're not playing this weekend, so you'll definitely see me next week.
That's it.